This is the Midweek Drive Morning Edition on Siren 107.3 FM.
Excellent. Highs today 22 degrees centigrade, lows 14 degrees centigrade. It's going to be dry and warm with some sunny spells, although there might be more cloud at times during the afternoon. A splendid day, and that's why you cycled in, no doubt, Dave Kenyon.
Well, I was also a bit late, so I couldn't walk.
Well, I
was physically capable of walking, exactly. But it wouldn't have fitted in.
Ah, well, life continues. Okay, how are we going to get through Saltersgate, Staintondale Terrier Shows, Radcliffe Donkey Sanctuary, and the intriguingly entitled Charmaine and her Shiggy, I'll say that again, Charmaine and her Shiggy accessories, together with Louth and Market Raisin Markets? I don't know. Minty Stee, can you share with us how we're going to do it?
I'm going to do our very best.
All right,
then. I
can't sort of quite. You sent me a text saying that you'd had problems with weather and wet weather. Has it been raining somewhere over the weekend? I mean, was it
yeah,
raining
weekend,
at all?
Yeah, we came down.
No.
Doing Lincolnshire. No, I know. It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, in this sun-baked, sun-dried out desert country, it's amazing to see rain. And yeah, it really did rain on Saturday, which I think anyone would know about what.
I don't know. We were at the Bramham Horse Trials. It seemed to be sort of fairly mild for most of the time.
Yeah, you weren't in Lincolnshire, were you?
Yeah. Well, yes. No, actually, we were. And it was quite interesting, as indeed Bill Cowling, the chief executive. In fact, the show director for the Great Yorkshire Show was saying, because we met up with Bill there. Anyway, yeah. Moving on. You had challenges in the rain, but you managed to sort of arrive at the various shows, and the terriers are doing well.
We did. Oh, yes, most certainly. We did fine. We've had a few hazards here and there, including, I know people would think, gosh, just I'm in a wheelchair, what else further could happen to you? But I happened to just unfortunately turn slightly with my head and it set off one of the major injuries. So I couldn't even hold a lead in my hand or anything and had to sort of push it into the car and sit there, and I could do nothing else but apart from containing just how much pain I was in, which rather threw a spanner in the works that way around. But we still managed to achieve, you know, in best working trio of terriers, father and offspring, you know, that you take in the sire and taking the offspring, and classes like that. Yes, we did okay with those. We were very pleased with that. And they had to very quickly change their location because the rain was so heavy on the Saturday along the Scarborough Coast area that the ground was flooded down at the bottom near the little hotel, so they had to quickly reconnoitre a field to use that wasn't completely knee-deep in mud.
Okay, so success as far as Saltersgate was concerned, and also Staintondale, that's outside Scarborough.
That's right. Saltersgate is on this Sunday.
Oh, right, okay.
Yes, that's right. And at Saltersgate, which is up near the turning where you can drop down to Thortley Dale and go straight up to Whitby, and it's just by the Fox and Rabbit Inn.
Okay.
It's on. They've extended their classes considerably this year, so it's well worth going. Go about a little before lunchtime, you should see most of it. There's also a whole absolute plethora all over Lincolnshire and Yorkshire of garden fates and village fates with scarecrows. Now, we've been seeing a growing amount of scarecrows coming up all over the villages, everywhere we've been for the past week or so, and it seems to be there's a massive sort of scarecrow festival going on now, right across certainly Lincolnshire and Yorkshire.
We'll check that out with our correspondent in Cumbria as well, Anne Clarkson. You're welcome. Return to the show.
See how far it's spreading.
Scarecrows happening out there as well. Amazing.
Yeah, they are. I know. Some of them are marvellous Bill and Ben ones, etc. We've got as well in the Heart of England dog shows. They're all run for charity. They don't take a single penny for themselves. They put them on all over the country, and they have several in various locations this weekend, including Milton Keynes, and we shall be attending the one at Ashby, which is in Leicester, and also trying out for one of the ones in the Northampton area as well over the next two or three weeks. And all you have to do is put in Heart of England dog shows and they will come up, and every penny goes straight directly to a local charity in the area of the shows, and it's a marvellous thing, and it's great fun too. We have added rather to some of the different adventures, and we're going to do an evening show on Friday my allowing for my situation, and if I can actually travel in the car, we're going to an evening one, which is the Lumsdale Foxhounds, and it's a settle in Yorkshire, North Yorkshire, and we're going to have a try at that. It should be interesting. It starts in the early evening, and it also has a magnificent display, understand of all the wonderful shepherd's crooks, etc., and walking sticks over the centuries, and I think that would be most interesting. We shall also be going to do, as I say, our best to see if we can manage Salter's Gate, my situation allowing, and we probably will be heading back down Lincoln, or we're going into Lancashire on Saturday. There are several shows available, and again, it sort of depends on my situation. And
It's just ongoing. Now, we're looking into at the Heart of England Dog Show site, very patriotic, yeah. As opposed to three lions, they actually have three canines on their badge, which is extraordinary.
Yeah, that's right.
Dave,
yeah.
Did you realise such things existed?
Oh, well, because of my research into websites, yes, I did know that websites existed. Thanks very much for that. I expect your listeners know that.
I know, it's astounding, really. It's amazing what sort of things we bring to the fore on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. But yes, you can actually go to heartofenglanddogshows.co.uk and they'll give you a whole heap of things there, including, say, some interesting history about the organisation and so on, plus dog show dates and schedules. Got to ask you, Minty, about Charmaine and her Shiggy accessories.
Oh, yeah, Shiggy accessories. Yeah, you don't want to be tongue-tied or in a certain situation, slight inebriation.
Got to be very careful.
That one.
Precisely.
No.
A shiggy can be a shaggy. You don't know where we're going here.
It could, especially at one of the big music festivals or similar. Yeah, they are marvellous. She's got quite a touch of style to her. Well, certainly a Charmaine. Everything's what you could call, you can easily purchase it. It isn't expensive, it isn't extravagant, but it's fun and they're of a decent quality. And there's certainly some lovely scarves and things that you would spend awful lot more money elsewhere in shops with certain names over them that you can get very reasonably there. And some very individually selected styles that just have that bit of something about them. They're not way out sort of things that only sort of a very adventurous 15-year-old would wear, but they are marvellous. She has a good eye for style, and it's well worth a look. And I found when we went round the Dunstan show that there's an absolute wealth of these people. The amount of different crafts there are, there's everything from making piccarilli, etc. And most of them, I did ask everyone there, do they go to any other events? And most mentioned either fairs or the fetes, and also the old style actual markets, which seems to be quite a few still on the go in Lincolnshire.
Always a heap of goodies. Yeah. Again, time is moving on, Minty. A reminder, of course, you'll see lots of wonderful stand holders and crafts and people at the Lincolnshire Show, the 130th Lincolnshire Show,
absolutely,
which, of course, next Wednesday and Thursday. We've got just enough time to actually mention Louthan Market, Raisin Market. So briefly, would you like to go through those?
That's right, yes. The Louth Market, absolutely everyone that we haven't time to mention today that was at Dunstan, they go to Louth and they go to Market Raisin. And when they're just a sample of the craft stalls and the various market stalls that are there, I think it's well worth bearing in mind that the market stalls do exist because generally you can do some very decent trade there, and you can buy decent things at a very reasonable cost. Markets have always been about, it's a tradition of our country, and I hope they continue and people will support them. And it really is worth a look. It's not been old-fashioned and silly. And also a mention for the Ratcliffe Donkey Sanctuary in Huttoff, which we found as we came down the coastline.
There you go. Minty, it's been fabulous as ever. We might do a little postscript on another podcast station, our sister station, Southside Broadcasting, probably tomorrow, all being well. But keep on keeping on in betwixt times.
Absolutely.
We'll mention those things there. We've still got to talk about the Lincoln Bull Foundation. We've got a whole heap of other things. Plus, it's the 50th anniversary of the movie Zulu.
I hear the drums echo.
Fifty years since Michael Caine foresaw those Afrikaans going over the hill. Rourke's Rift? Drift? I don't know. Anyway, it's all good. 4 years ago, of course, it was the World Cup in South Africa, and I have a suspicion that our Royal Correspondent Extraordinaire, and indeed film critic, will probably be sort of sitting in front of the television with his England shirt in hand. No, maybe not, Richard. I don't know. I can't quite see you somehow as being a major association football fan, but you might surprise us.
Well, I might. The problem is time. And remember that we've got the honours out on Saturday, and I've got to look at them tomorrow. The Queen's Birthday Honours.
Yes.
Trooping the Colour. Of course, the official Queen's Birthday Parade as well, and also Royal Ascot. And then there's a coronation in Spain.
Exactly.
So
yeah,
it's a matter of time, really.
Precisely. Precisely so. I trust that when he's orating about the next Martian Venusian Intergalactic Cup, Sepp Blatter actually appreciates the sort of areas that we're working through on this basis.
What a man. I sincerely hope so. Yes, indeed.
You just got to imagine, you sort of announced the whole thing by saying, yes, in years to come, we will be playing on other planets as well. Football is spread out for other galaxies.
Perhaps it depends whether he's paid in cash. Or perhaps I shouldn't say that.
I couldn't possibly comment. There we are, the voice of Dave Kenyon, the founder of the Lincoln Bull Foundation, which is now live as far as websites and things are actually concerned, preferably through Chrome or various other sort of Microsoft things there. But Lincoln Bull Foundation, it's all about what, Dave?
Well, it's all about George Bull. That's what it's all about.
Never won an award or was nominated for an award, Richard, but maybe posthumously. Can they give posthumous knighthoods and things to people like 200 years after they've passed on?
Well, for example, I mean, you can get a posthumous Victoria Cross. Mm-hmm. But regarding the posthumous awarding, well, I mean, it's not so much awarding knighthoods, it's wanting to take them away. Mm. If you look at the row that's blown up over the knighthood of Savile, and the fact that, unfortunately, it can't be removed because he's dead.
Well, I mean,
this is a real problem.
Didn't it go anyway when he actually died? Wasn't that the sort of thing that effectively it was pointless because actually once he died, that was it?
Well, this is a trouble. I mean, to remove it, there isn't the facility within the way these orders are bestowed. To take them away from someone when they're dead, the Honours Forfeiture Committee have the remit treason. Anthony Blunt, for example, Roger Casement, I mean, they lost theirs. Or if you've been imprisoned for more than a certain period, can lose it. For example, Lester Pigott's OBE and so forth, quite a large number. And also, this is the key, bringing the honours system into disrepute, which meant Fred Goodwin lost his, a former disgraced CEO of the Royal
Bank. You were
Bank
not a fan, were you, Richard? You were not a fan. I think we can go on record as saying you were not a fan.
Well, you're absolutely right, I wasn't. But one of the problems is that if you have an honours system, you must make sure that, on the whole, people feel that it represents the awarding of honours on merit in a way that is generally acceptable.
Okay.
And that is why he had to lose it. But it's a real difficulty that when you discover someone has been a notorious paedophile and they're dead, there isn't the facility to take away the knighthood at the present time.
Richard, obviously things are worked through. Let's find out a little bit from Dave Kenyon, and we'll be going through the show with respect to this about the Lincoln Bull Foundation, and just a reminder, a little reprise, a précis really, of the importance of George Bull. Jeff Thompson actually was having an interview with the new head of mathematics at the University of Lincoln, and Bull was mentioned on yesterday's programme. Yes, that's Jeff Thompson.
And quite right too. Yes. How it couldn't be mentioned in Lincoln with the head of mathematics.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have understood.
So share with the listener and possibly Richard what the magic of George Bull is all about.
Well, in short, he, albeit accidentally, invented the way everything digital thinks, I suppose. So I usually say nowadays he invented the DNA of digitality.
What do you think,
good
Richard?
Lord, that sounds like HAL in 2001, the computer that thought on its own.
Yes, exactly. IBM HAL. I suppose, actually, without George Bull, we might not have got to HAL singing Daisy, Daisy, Give Me Your Answer.
We certainly wouldn't have done, no. I'm sure, apart from anything else, he thought it was a religious event. So I suppose that sometimes films do make that connection between our reliance upon digitality and possibly giving digitality too much credence. So I think Bull would have been okay with that.
We'll come back to that. Richard, we move on dexterously now to a movie which I feel is probably equal in terms of quality with another one of my all-time favourites, that, of course, being the Hugh Jackman vehicle, Australia, classic with Baz Luhrmann, and, of course, Nicole Kidman, who's also... She's done it again! She's done Grace of Monaco! Hurrah! Yes! Yes.
Indeed, and I have to say...
It's bombed, according to the news, shall we say. It's bombed at the box office.
A certain critic said that the characters, I rather like this one, the characters are so wooden that you could set them alight. Would that he were exaggerating. Now, this is a film that's not only bad, it's absolutely terrible, and I want to tell you why.
Oh, no.
Firstly, it's set in 1962. Now, it could have been exciting because the Principality of Monaco, two dramatic events happening, one most particularly with reference to the fact that money laundering was occurring, at least in the view of French President de Gaulle, who closed the border and definitely had eyes on annexing the principality, which was ruled, of course, by Prince Rainier. Rainier's glamorous wife, former Hollywood film star Grace Kelly, Hitchcock wants her back for another movie, Marnie, and is trying to tempt her.
What, Tippi Hedren not good enough for him, then? What's going on?
What's going on, in fact, in this movie is that Olivier Dahan, he directed La Vie en Rose, the story of Edith Piaf. Marion Cotillard won the second actress ever to win an Oscar for a foreign language film, and did superbly. But the narrative of that movie was very uneven. And my goodness, nothing prepared me for this. The problem is, a biopic doesn't have to reflect reality, but it shouldn't be pure fantasy. But even if you allow for the fact that practically nothing in this movie actually happened, what you can't allow for is the sheer awfulness of the dialogue, the fairy story that starts going very wrong until, and the problem is Dahan views Princess Grace as some form of goddess. And the terrifying aspect of it is that so much of it is filmed. The camera moves, as it were, almost incinerating her in close-up. And quite frankly, if you listen to the dialogue, you wish perhaps that you too were being put under the shredder, because there are some truly awful scenes. Rainier, for example, was supposed to have hit a photographer. Well, in this film, for example, that is altered to the fact that when he has a row with the minister from de Gaulle's government, who says, "You have married the daughter from a bricklayer of Philadelphia," well, of course, he hits him. I mean, they're rows. The two aren't getting on. Rainier is played by Tim Roth. He is appalling. I mean, Rainier was a pugnacious aristocrat who had just seen off Onassis in a war over the casino in Monaco. Tim Roth is a pathetic, insipid spiv, and he's awful. Nicole Kidman, well, she's had career highs for me in movies like The Hours and The
Australia.
Other Rabbit Hole. Australia is one of the worst, as in Moulin Rouge and Cold Mountain. There are pluses and minuses. This is, it's a gigantic disaster. If you consider the childishness of some of this, the fact that she single-handedly gives a ball, which not only captivates the girl who actually in the movie attends, but also, of course, and the fairy tale becomes reality because she and Rainier, their marriage is mended. And she even starts to learn, dare I say, it's 6 years in the post, and she still doesn't know anything about the history of Monaco, indeed anything about the way Rainier's court is composed. But there are really searingly bad sequences here. Robert Lindsay, poor soul, plays the Nassus. Pathetic. And Derek Jacobi, the courtier who, aristocrat who instructs Princess Grace in the history of Monaco. Frank Langella, another famous actor. I mean,
he's Father Francis Tucker.
The problem with this movie is that, in the view of the director, Grace Kelly was some form of goddess. Mm-hmm. But in the view of viewers of this, it is a torture to sit through.
It's only 103 minutes.
Whoever wrote it and directed it has not even the remotest conception of any form of reality. And a biopic should have some dramatic feel to it. From the moment you see Hitchcock being introduced in the first scene to the climax of the film, which is just this dreadfully embarrassing ball. It is toe-curlingly awful. And not only is there no link with reality, except the fact that he thinks Grace is some form of a fantasy goddess, the fact is that it is drearily and utterly unconvincing. Kidman's all-time low, bar Australia, I've got to say that. It's sort of equal, I'd say. And Roth, quite ghastly. There is absolutely
nothing. You've got Paz Vega as Maria Callas.
I hoped you wouldn't identify her.
Please.
No, it's that bad. It really is an embarrassing film. I mean, the script is shocking.
If it helps, it's only taken £238,000 in its opening weekend, and it has indeed officially bombed at the UK and Ireland box office. So.
But the extraordinary thing was it opened the Cannes Film Festival because in 1955, Grace Kelly was a member of the US delegation and subsequently met Prince Rainier on a famous shoot for Paris Match arranged by the husband of Olivia de Havilland. The point was that, well, frankly, you've got awfulness reaching very, very unusual levels here.
Sounds like one of your old criticisms, Dave, as a tutor at the university. Awfulness.
Oh, I think that's unfair. I was just wondering whether it's bad enough to become a cult movie.
Yeah.
No.
No, I mean, it doesn't even have that to save it. Oh, dear.
No, I mean, the point is sometimes movies, you review them somewhat affectionately after a few years when they've been panned, or after several decades when they've been panned, and they do assume the status you mentioned. I mean, it's been compared to Diana, but the comparison doesn't really stand up because Diana was a silly little movie that just disappeared amidst piles of bad reviews. Nobody went to see that. But this, it's got the soaring orchestral horrors of, the music and the visuals. Yes, it's lavish. How could it not be? They remain in the memory. This is the thing. No one's going to forget this, not of the few who paid to see it. I urge those who haven't to stay away from it.
Well, there we are. He said it. So obviously not as good as Maleficent, which you were eulogising about last week, Richard.
No, but Maleficent's terrific. Whereas, I mean, here, if you have an argument between Grace Kelly and Prince Rainier, this is at a lunch. It's one of the most gruesomely embarrassing scenes. I mean, BBC film critic Mark Kermode showed this on the news channel and as an example of how a scene ought not to be scripted. It is ghastly. This is the second time I'd seen it, of course, because having seen it on the wide screen. And you realise
it doesn't improve
rubbish
repeated viewings?
Repeated viewings would be a torment, and the damned might find that they get inflicted with it in the afterlife.
Right, well, there's no need to beat around the bush, Richard. You can always say what you really think about these things, as you know. 22 Jump Street is next up. Scoring a lot higher, it has to be said, than Grace in terms of IMDb, Rotten Tomatoes, or Tomatoes. After making their way through high school, big changes are in store for officers Schmidt and Jenko when they go
Schmidt
deep.
Schmidt and Jenko, yes. It's the chemistry between Schmidt, played by Jonah Hill, and Jenko, played by Channing Tatum, that makes this tick over rather well because they're chasing narcotics, narcotics dealers led by Ghost. And they're working, what's more, for Captain Dixon, who's played by Ice Cube. They're now located at 22, not 21 Jump Street, and they go undercover as college students to locate the supplier of a drug known as Wi-Fi, which has already killed a student. It's, I mean, I would say that there's enough in this movie which doesn't take itself seriously and has some hilarious moments in the closing sequences and when the subtitles are running. There's enough to entertain and amuse. It's taken a lot of the box office. It's done well critically. I have to say that a lot of it is extremely unsubtle, but that you expect, and I got a lot more fun out of Dangerous Neighbours. But having said that, it's colourful, it's entertaining, it's amusing. It's playing to a particular audience and they won't feel let down because the two main characters are extremely good. And that is, if you can take your eyes off when she's on the screen, of May, played by Amber Stevens, who is very much a partner of Schmidt, but also the daughter of Captain Dixon, who might take kindly to this affair.
Would Ice Cube have made a better Prince Rainier than Tim Roth then? I mean, is it
kind Ice, of... Ice Cube's got some personality. Roth is some form of limp, silly, pathetically inadequate.
So no is your answer, then, basically?
No.
Okay. So it's thumbs up, I think two thumbs up.
No, my answer, by the way, is yes. Sorry, no, my answer is yes. I know you're putting words in my mouth. My answer is it makes much... I mean, Ice Cube to put a bit of character into it.
Right, okay.
Yes.
Well, there we are. It's all in the casting, Dave. All in the casting. 22 Jump Street, of course, the sequel to 21 Jump Street, which in turn was actually based on a TV series with Johnny Depp. Strange but true. There we are.
Is that called 20 Jump Street?
No, it was 21 Jump Street. Is that
21 and
now
going to get 23.
Well, it's just going...
Oh, fantastic.
Exactly. As opposed to Jump Street 23, which is another line you actually were. Anyway, there's nothing wrong with a good sequel. It's 50 years since Zulu actually hit the screens. Some of us might have possibly been around at the time or didn't know to catch it. But anyway, moving on. Prince Harry had organised a special event for this, Richard.
Yes, he did indeed, and this was a gala screening at the Odeon Leicester Square, a remastered copy of a movie that is an absolutely first-class tribute to the heroism of the time, the defence of Rorke's Drift. No question that this was an interesting evening because Mark Kermode introduced the movie and Blake played to the son, and this was for the charities sent in Bali and Walking with the Wounded, which of course was supported by Prince Harry and the David Rattray Memorial Trust. And we also saw, I have to say I wish I had looked away because I never like seeing how films are actually made, I like the illusion, some interesting footage of how the movie was actually shot, and greetings from Sir Michael Caine and Chief Buttiglione. Now that was riveting, Michael Caine actually saying what getting that part meant. Well, him, he wished he'd been there.
Other than sort of Alfie, of course, it was, you know, it was sort of set him on a whole new world career, really, didn't it?
No, it most emphatically did, and it was sought by director Cy Enfield that Caine would play a totally different role.
Do you not think he would have been better just staying with Maurice Micklewhite as his original name, though? I mean, I often wonder that, you know.
Well, it is an interesting thought, and I suggest that you drop my...
Should I drop him a line?
Letter. Yes, yeah. Suggest that, yes.
Yeah. Dear Maurice, brackets Michael, just been thinking, you know, talking about the midweek drive, well, we might put that together. Could be a supporter of Boole, of course. Sweet Michael Caine could play George Boole in the Boole Foundation film. That's a thought, Dave.
Apart from the fact that George died at 49,
yeah,
and I'm not sure Michael could convincingly play 49
exactly.
Any longer.
It would
not
have
even
to
Michael.
Say that it was a joy seeing Michael Caine talking about it, because he's really, I mean, you wished he'd been there with us, but it, you know, he really does have a star quality, as we all know, and it was interesting hearing how he got the role, which I didn't know, and seeing what it meant to him. And as it's a really remarkably well shot film. It doesn't answer, as any film made today would, dealing with what was basically a British invasion of Zululand. I mean, no question at all that it would, we'd be asking why they were there. But this was paying tribute to the extraordinary heroism of roughly 100 who British soldiers holding out against some 4,000 Zulus, an enormous force. And with all the Victoria Crosses won and so forth, an amazing film. And it's fascinating to get the opportunity of seeing it on the wide screen, because like Mark Kermode, I hadn't seen it on a large screen since the 1960s.
You mentioned it was revealed how Michael Caine actually got the part. Do you want to share that with us, Richard, or do you just want to say, no, that's only for those who are there?
Well, no, it was simply that Cy Enfield thought that he'd play one of the other characters, but since the role was already cast, he met Caine and asked him, can you do a posh accent? Caine, of course, said I could do all sorts of accents, and that was the chance where he could have got his big break to play Broomhead, not Bromhead, so he was told by the family. It's mispronounced in the film, but an officer and a gentleman who, with Stanley Baker's charred, they defend this indefensible position. Absolutely remarkable. And Caine saying that you know, he really would have been so thrilled to have been at the Odeonesta Square. He was filming and couldn't.
But he couldn't. So he's probably watching Grace of Monaco and sort of just sort of psyching himself up for saying, oh, if only I could have actually been like Frank Langella. Or maybe not.
I suspect he is well out of that one, but there's no doubt at all that looking back 50 years, it's very good to see a movie, because so often, you know, a movie that was good in past decades, it can lose something which appear dated. Not in this case. The action sequences are absolutely first class. As I say, it doesn't ask why, but what it does is depict, and that's impressive. And Chief Buthelezi played his ancestor, King Quechua, and again, not only interesting performance.
Richard, the time has been reached where we have to say it's obviously not a thumbs up or any sort of positive lawn for Grace of Monaco, but two thumbs up for 22 Jump Street and, of course, Zulu, which worked well from that perspective. Haven't really had a chance to talk about briefly mentioned, obviously, the Queen's Birthday Honours. Next week, we're at the Lincolnshire Shows, so we're going to have to set up some kind of pre-packaged system which can go into podcast things. We'll talk about that. I take it you've had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
I've thoroughly enjoyed it, but then the material has been irresistible in one way or another.
I could use that as a quote, actually, for the byline for Grace of Monaco. The material is irresistible in one way or another.
Yeah,
as said by Richard Fitzwilliams. Richard, you'll return very soon, no doubt.
I look forward to it.